Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. With us today is Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. And today's topic will be on Association Health Plans updates. So, Shelley, Association Health Plans have been in existence for some time now. Why the new rule?
Well, with the Affordable Care Act and President Trump coming in to take over, and you remember that when he first came in, he said he was going to do away with the Affordable Care Act. He wasn't able to do that, so then he developed an executive order, and he ordered this back in October of 2017. So this new rule is going to allow some options for small businesses and individuals such as a sole proprietor or partners in a small company. It will provide some administrative functions. It will make the health coverage design and purchase decisions a little bit easier. So that's why all of this came about, along with most of the people that are 65 and older are covered by Medicare. Most of the poor are covered by Medicaid or CHIP. 60% of the individuals under 65 have employer coverage. 33% of those get their coverage from an employer that has 50 or more employees. Only 9% of the small private employers offer insurance, and about 9% of the individuals get insurance. The rest of the people get theirs from the government. So you can see that there's quite a breakdown of reasons why President Trump is looking at offering these association health plans for small employers and for individuals.
So it sounds like many small employers don't offer coverage. How does this new rule help?
Small employers can band together under this new association health plan rule to purchase coverage, and they would make themselves one larger group by doing this. The association health plan will be treated as a single large employer plan. It relaxes the requirement of common interest. In other words, you can now form an association, and it can be for the purchase of health insurance, but you also have to have another substantial business reason why you are banding together for becoming an association. Secondly, it does confirm that for groups and associations that the members operate in the same trade or industry, a line of business, or a profession, and they can all sponsor a health plan regardless of the geographic distribution. So in other words, if we're looking at farmers across the country, potentially we could touch all 50 states, or realtors as an example. And then the third would be by geographic region, where large metropolitan cities, which some could go over another state line, and they could all be a part of this association health plan. It does clarify the existing requirements that bona fide groups or associations, again, must have at least one substantial business purpose that is unrelated to the purchase of health insurance. So they have to have a reason for existing, like the realtors. You know, maybe it's for furthering their education as a whole. That's why the association is created, but it also allows them to purchase health insurance.
So, are there coverage requirements such as the 10 essential health benefits and minimum value?
There are not specifically. They are not required to be included. So, the 10 essential health benefits that small groups have to comply with and individuals have to comply with are not included as a part of the law. You have design latitude here. In other words, if an association wants to include 3 of the 10 essential health benefits or 5 of the 10, they can certainly do it. But the association health plan is going to allow them to build design specific for the needs of the group that they're bringing together. They can't deny based on any pre-existing condition. And if you offer coverage for dependent children, you must offer it to the age of 26. There is a ban on annual and lifetime dollar limits if you include that essential health benefit in what you're offering. There are caps on out-of-pocket expenses for that covered essential health benefit. There is a prohibition on waiting periods that would exceed 90 days, so that's been a part of the ACA law for a long time. There are protections for the selections of your network, your primary care doctor, a pediatrician, an OBGYN. Right now you can select those without a referral or a pre-auth, and that would extend with those association health plans if one of those essential health benefits was what you included in there. You would have to offer coverage for employer services if you included that one, as well as for women, breast cancer surgery allows you to be reconstructed, and childbirth, the particular period of stay. There's also appeals for denial of health claims and external review. So if you include some of these 10 essential health benefits, then you also have to follow the rules that are a part of the ACA. If you don't include some of those essential health benefits, then you do not have to follow it. And the last piece you asked was related to the minimum value. And an association health plan does not have to offer a minimum value plan. And just as a reminder, a minimum value plan would meet at least 60% coverage. We have the bronze, silver, gold, platinum that we go 60, 70, 80, 90. So it doesn't have to meet the 60% test, but if you are an ALE, an applicable large employer, and you join the association health plan, then you would still be subject to that employer responsibility, the play or pay, where if you don't offer minimum value coverage, you could be subject to penalties.
So what about the state mandates? How would these new association health plans deal with them?
Well, that's a good question, and obviously we have 50 states, and we have had association health plans, or sometimes better known as MEWA, multiple employer welfare arrangements that have existed in many states, and states each have different mandates, requirements for coverages that you have to have, and these are still going to be up to the states. And in the new regulation, they specifically cite Pennsylvania as an example where groups are required to offer in and outpatient mental health coverage, autism coverage, childhood immunizations, and mammograms. So if you get to an employer group with 50 or more, you are required to offer all of those in Pennsylvania. There's different rules in California and different ones in New York. So states will be allowed to adopt new minimum benefit standards for association health plans as we go forward.
So when does this new rule become effective?
Well, it becomes effective on August 20th, which is 60 days after the rule was issued, and it will be rolled out in three different phases. So the first phase is for group plans that would be effective September 1st and later, and those are fully insured association health plans. So in other words, you're going to use a fully insured product to insure your association health plan. The second phase is January 1st, and that is for existing self-funded plans and self-insured plans. And then the final wave would be April 1st and moving forward, and that is for newly created self-funded or self-insured plans that want to use the association health plan status. And the reason for doing this phase-in was to allow the departments and states to prepare, to allow for checking up on the financial management, because in the past there has been a lot of financial mismanagement and states have had to close down some of the association health plans or MEWAs that had existed in the past.
So are there any federal reporting required for association health plans?
Yes, they are considered a MEWA, so as such, they have to file an M-1. And also, regardless of the size of your association health plan, you are also required to file a Form 5500.
What about health insurance carriers or issuers? Can they sponsor an association health plan?
I think this is the biggest thing that everyone has been looking forward to. And in the new rule, it says that if you are an insurance carrier or an insurance issuer, no, you cannot control or own an association. They're trying to make a distinction here between commercial insurance, which most of us have now. If you're a small employer or a large employer, you're purchasing coverage from an insurance carrier. With these association health plans, they want the association to be formed. They want directors and officers to be chosen by the association. And remember, they're not solely getting together for the purchase of health insurance. They have to have at least one other substantial reason. So an insurance carrier cannot build these association health plans and dole out the rules and then say to everyone else, you can come and join. It really is the reverse, where the associations decide what they want to do, and then they go to an insurance carrier to say, will you offer these things as we want them to be? And obviously this first phase where we're looking at fully insured plans, those are plans that are already created off the shelf, so associations are going to be able to go to a carrier and say, will you provide that for us? What insurance carriers can do is act as an administrative services only, or ASO. They can act as a TPA, a third-party administrator, so they can help to create the formulary, the network, record keeping, audits, assist in setting up the association health plan. They can be a part of an association health plan themselves, but we want to keep it clear what an insurance carrier does different for the association health plans than what we do in a true commercial market type of offering that we've had up to this point.
Now, Shelley, this rule seems very long and complicated, and I'm sure we've only scratched the surface. What are your closing comments on all this?
Well, the biggest thing is we're far from learning everything we need to know about association health plans. We expect to have a compliance bulletin out very soon that will highlight a lot of the things that we've already talked about and will probably go into greater detail. Secondly, for each state that's going to offer association health plans, we want to look at the state rules and regulations that will be coming out from each particular state. States have had a lot of experience with association health plans, or MIWAs, and many have been forced to close some of those because of the lack of funds from the association or poor management. California is still our leader. They have 122 MIWAs that are currently in operation. New York has 94. And self-insured MIWAs are more vulnerable than the fully insured ones. So that's why as we have this rollout that starts in September and then January and then April, we're going from the least vulnerable to the most vulnerable as these are rolled out in pieces. The budget and the rate impacts, they will likely increase the rates for those employers that decide to remain fully insured in the small group market, and it will probably increase the cost of individual insurance as we go forward. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is also looking at this as being an increase to the deficit because of offering these association health plans. So you may see some rule changes as we go forward, but we had this order followed by the initial rule. There were over 900 comments that were made about the initial association health plan rules. What we got on June 21st was the finalized rules, and it doesn't mean that they can't be changed, but it looks like, you know, as we go forward, what we had printed as of June 21st is going to become official and the law on August 20th. We will definitely keep you updated as anything changes and look more into what happens state by state to see what anyone can do with association health plans.
Great. Thank you, Shelley. And everyone, thank you for listening in. I would also like to make the following disclaimer before we end. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. Thank you, Shelley, once again. And everyone, we hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, then please contact your account manager or salesperson.